Good day, and welcome to the P&F Industries Inc. 2021 earnings call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Richard Goodman, the company's general counsel. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, operator. Good morning, and welcome to P&F Industries' full year 2021 conference call. With us today from management are Richard Horowitz, Chairman, President, and Chief Executive Officer, and Joseph Molino, Chief Operating Officer and Chief Financial Officer. Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that any forward-looking statements discussed on today's call by our management, including those related to the company's future performance and outlook, are based upon the company's historical performance and current plans, estimates, and expectations, which are subject to various risks and uncertainties, including but not limited to risks related to the global outbreak of COVID-19 and other public health crises, risks associated with sourcing from overseas, disruption in the global capital and credit markets, importation delays, customer concentration, unforeseen inventory adjustments or changes in purchasing patterns, market acceptance of products, competition, price reductions, exposure to fluctuations in energy prices, the strength of the retail economy in the U.S. and abroad, risk associated with Brexit, adverse changes in currency exchange rates, interest rates, debt and debt service requirements, borrowing and compliance with covenants under our credit facility, impairment of long-lived assets and goodwill, retention of key personnel, acquisition of businesses, regulatory environment, litigation and insurance, the threat of terrorism and related political instability and economic uncertainty, and business disruptions or other costs associated with information technology, cyber attacks, system implementations, data privacy, or catastrophic losses. And as other risks and uncertainties described in the reports and statements filed by the company with the SEC, including, among others, as described in our most recent annual report on Form 10-K, our quarterly reports on Form 10-Q, and our other filings. These risks could cause the company's actual results for future periods to differ materially from those expressed in any forward-looking statement made by or on behalf of the company. Forward-looking statements speak only as of the date on which they are made, and the company undertakes no obligation to update publicly or revise any forward-looking statements, whether as a result of new information, future developments, or otherwise. And with that, I would now like to turn the call over to Richard Horowitz. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning, Rich, and thank you all so much for being on the call with us today and joining us for P&S results for the full year of 2021. I hope all of you are doing well as the country and the world are trying to exit the ill effects of the global pandemic. Our thoughts and prayers go out to those who have lost loved ones due to this deadly disease. Further, our thoughts and prayers go out to the victims of the current crisis occurring in Ukraine. May it soon come to a peaceful solution. During 2021, P&F continued to encounter the ill effects of the COVID-19 global pandemic. The areas in 2021 most affected were the inability or extreme limitation of our sales force, which was when they encountered their efforts to gain on-site product presentations, which in particular hampered the growth of our PTG or gears business. The supply chain disruptions, which caused major delays in receipt of much-needed inventories, as we all see every day in the newspapers, and lastly, the excessive costs incurred in connection with the supply chain delays. I would like to direct your attention to the company's press release that was released earlier today, which includes the company's December 31, 2021 balance sheet, statement of operations, statements of cash flows, and discussion related to the company's results for full year 2021 and how they compare to the full year 2020. In order to make better use of everyone's time today, yet be mindful of the purpose of this conference call, I would like to remind all of you of the following procedures that have been in place for quite some time now. First, as we have done for several previous conference calls and has become our standard practice, we will move directly to a question and answer session and not restate what is already in this morning's release. Secondly, and please be aware that we will only be answering questions directly related to the company's results of operations and financial condition. We must insist that you adhere to this procedure. Management will not be entertaining any questions that go beyond the scope of this call. And with that, we would be happy to answer any pertinent questions anybody may have. Operator, you can open up the question line.
Thank you. And if you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, press star 1 to ask a question. We'll go to our first question from Andrew Shapiro with Lawndale Capital Management.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
Yes, we hear you fine.
Awesome. So I have to, it's unfortunate, but every fourth quarter I kind of have to ask this. You know, your board of directors, I'm sure you guys prepare for them the results for the fourth quarter ended December in addition to the annual, but your press release repeatedly each fourth quarter doesn't include that breakout, and I don't understand why you can't provide that to shareholders as well in your press release, and I respectfully ask you guys do that going forward, but of course we'll wait three more quarters to get the same, you know, thing. Is there a reason you can't or you don't provide the fourth quarter numbers?
Andrew, it's not required. It's certainly a lot of extra work. And by the way, we don't prepare something like that for the board of directors, to my knowledge.
Your board does not want to look at how the quarter's performance is when they have their quarterly meeting?
Simple move.
We look at the whole year, and they can do math if they'd like.
So you make them do the same reverse engineering that we have to do as shareholders. Is that correct?
They're more concerned about the full year results.
Okay. Moving on to the questions from what I could see. So a few questions regarding the kind of the COVID-19 impacts to know where things stand this last quarter, as well as where we stand now here in at the end of March, another full 3 months after. For what part of the quarter, if any, were you able finally to conduct on-site visits with current or prospective customers for high-tech PTG as well as your existing North American aerospace like Boeing and its suppliers, as well as prospective overseas aerospace customers like Airbus? I know you cite in there that there's still difficulties, but to any extent of the fourth quarter, were you able to conduct any on-site visits in either of those two, I guess, industry groups and customer groups?
It was very, very sporadic. Very sporadic, and it depended on the area that the company was in, the geographic location of it, and what their COVID case load was like at that time. Boeing specifically really does not and still really does not take customers, vendors too much. Sporadically we can, and Airbus has not opened up yet, but they're momentarily claim they're going to be.
Okay, and then on PTG, were you able to get into some or not?
Yeah, we got into some customers, and other customers we couldn't get into. It was very sporadic. Nothing.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then from the end of the year, fourth quarter, and basically until this week, basically much of the first quarter, have things improved further?
They've improved, I would say, slightly, but not. If you're referring to Boeing and Airbus, the answer is no, really. But the others, you know, we're seeing customers, but now with the new Omicron variant that seems to be gaining a lot of steam in Europe and other places, it's becoming, it's on everybody's mind again. Sorry to say.
Right. Okay. Because it's been pretty highly publicized how, well, Boeing is nowhere near the production rate they were at before the 737 grounding. That the production rates have greatly scaled up and are scaling up, and that there's been publicity about how Boeing needs its suppliers and others to step up, and there's concerns whether they can. So with that kind of sentiment, are you seeing green shoots with respect to them wanting to get its vendors, and you're pretty much like a supplier to vendors. You know, you're supplying tools. You're not really supplying the airframes themselves. But are they giving indications of opening up or wanting you to start focusing on being ready to supply them?
First of all, are people who are on the ground there in touch,
yeah,
or in the factory, are saying that the numbers that are being released publicly, we just heard this last week, are not even close to what they actually are at Boeing. Not even close is what they're telling us. I don't know where those numbers come from. I can't tell you that. You know, I read the same numbers you do, and we all kind of thought it was going to get better, but it's not to those levels yet. Am I right, Joe? That's what we're told.
Yeah, it's unclear. No, but you can't really get a straight answer about what the actual production level is per month, but we do feel it's below what's been publicly stated.
Okay. And where do operations with respect to any supply chain disruptions currently stand? Are you seeing any improvement in the situation?
Not at all.
No.
Not even a little bit.
And again, the issue isn't so much production at the plants overseas. It's getting it from the plant by truck to the port, getting it on a port, a boat, finding a boat, the boat leaving on time, and then the boat not being delayed at the three or four other stops along the way between, you know, Shanghai and Miami. So no, it's not better.
We're dealing with it as best we can, like every other company, and let's not forget talking about inflation and the pricing and all that stuff that goes with it, from the shipping to the product itself. It's an enormous challenge every day between getting the product and paying, you know, getting the right price for it, which is impossible.
Right.
Actually.
And a related question here, in the inventory you built up to increase your safety stocks, am I correct that this is mostly finished goods at Florida Pneumatic against regularly stocked items?
That is correct.
And do you feel the company is now at desirable levels, and have the out-of-stock problems been addressed?
Again, there are several items that are out of stock, and there are others that we have an abundance of product. Joe, anything you want to add to that?
I would say we're at least a month or two away to the point where I feel like we're fully stocked.
Okay. And regarding the large late 2021 order you also built inventory for, am I correct to assume it's in Florida Pneumatic as well?
Yes, it's the bulk of the buildup is Florida Pneumatic, but far and away.
Yeah, and can you clarify the timing of when you book revenues and the receivable for that order? And it's the end of March. Has this late 2021 order shipped out, or what is its status now?
It has not shipped yet.
Okay. And when you book revenues and the receivable, it's not booked until you ship. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, great. I'll back out, but I have more questions. I'm seeing if there's others here.
All right, thanks.
We'll go to our next question from Timothy Stabos.
Good morning, gentlemen. I own 4% of the company, and back in on a conference call here. Happy New Year to everyone. I wanted to start by asking an earnings-related question that's kind of a 50,000-foot level question, and that is, you guys have done a lot over the last several years to remake the company. You've sold divisions, you've acquired things. You've got a vision and a strategy, it seems to me, with regard to, you know, who you want to service and what you want to do. And you've been hit by unfortunate headwinds on oil with the insane volatility over a number of years here of, you know, yo-yoing cycles. And of course, Aramax. My question for you is, how do you feel about, you know, it's not shown in the numbers, obviously, but how do you feel about what you've been doing to, you know, when you look at P&F now versus a decade ago when we baseboard heating what we were doing a long time ago, how do you feel about what you've been doing to try to give you credit for, you know, I want to hear in your own words, obviously, like where the company's going and these strategies and that they will pay off and that you believe in them and where we're going from here, because, you know, you haven't been really credited, obviously, in the numbers. But I kind of want to hear you say to the shareholder base that sees presumably the value I see in the stock, you know, where we're going and what you think. So it's can you speak to that?
Tim, this is Joe. I'll try. I would agree that we've had to pivot a little bit you know, we've been in the tool business for a long time, and for a very long time, at least on the Florida pneumatic side, there were various distribution channels that were the way that you got the product to market. And what we started to see, especially with respect to the automotive, was that the younger mechanics, techs, were more and more comfortable with their iPads and their iPhones, and instead of you know, entertaining a van from one of the big distributors like Snap-on, they were getting more and more comfortable with the internet and ordering product directly. And you know, we've had a big shift in that business. We've had growth overall, but more importantly, a shift away from the traditional channels into more online, both through Amazon and several large distributors who are also very large online. So we saw that, and I think we were out in front of that, frankly. And I don't quote me on this, but I think in 2020, we had the most popular tool, the most popular half-inch impact sold on Amazon. And, you know, we're up against some pretty big players. So I feel very good about that move. And, you know, where we didn't have the expertise in that marketing, we brought some people in to help us, and I think we did, you know, they did a great job with that. And then, you know, on the high-tech side, I think the big pivot, which maybe you're alluding to, was, you know, historically the business was built on large impacts targeted towards, you know, oil and gas and, you know, general construction, and it was a distribution push model. And that was becoming more and more difficult as we were starting to see the encroachment in that business from Asian imports, and as well as just kind of a general shift away, you know, from the standard model impact wrench that was more popular, moving to more torque control tools and hydraulic tools. So we took a look at what we were good at, which was engineering and reverse engineering and development and in the airspace, and said, hey, we can use that brain power to try to go after what we call OEM business, where we use our understanding of air power. And while we're not selling necessarily an air tool, we're selling something that's, you know, an air-powered product or gearbox or something inside of a larger product. And then from there, we've seen an opportunity, what I see as a tremendous opportunity in gears in general nationwide. There's a very fragmented market for gears in the U.S., and that market is very, in my opinion, a good chunk of it is very insulated from foreign imports. And we've seen an opportunity to go out and acquire a number of smaller competitors, and there are, you know, many others out there, you know, not just in the East, but in the South, in the Midwest, and you know, without necessarily signaling exactly our intentions, we think there's a lot of runway for us to build quite an operation nationally in the gear business. So we've increased the breadth of products we offer. We've doubled, even tripled the number of engineers involved in that business, and we're starting to see some real. We're starting to get some head turns from some very large companies that buy gears, because they're used to dealing with $1 and $2 million companies, and now they're dealing with, you know, a much more sophisticated entity, and so we're very, very excited about the future there. And again, that's a big pivot, you know. 10 years ago, we were selling half-inch impacts, so that was 90% of the business. And that business isn't there anymore for various reasons, so we've had to move on. And we still sell plenty of half-inch impacts and three-quarter-inch impacts, but there are other places now to make money.
And I'll make one other mention, that the high-tech company, we turned the company totally in a different direction. And so now we get these emails from time to time from people about the Baker Hughes rig count, et cetera, that really has very, very little to do with our business anymore, very little. We still sell it, but it's the tail wagging the dog. So anybody who's on this call that does that should understand that.
Okay, I'll get back into you. Suffice it to say, I really appreciate that color. Thank you, gentlemen. Suffice it to say, I presume that you still believe that this strategy is something that can earn well into not asking for earnings projections, but well into a double-digit return on equity, right? Is that fair?
We can't say that.
I can't give you a prediction of return on equity, but I believe it's the best return for the shareholders, the direction we're going, given the skills we currently have.
Right.
Okay. I'll get back in queue. Thank you for that all that color.
Uh-huh. As a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question at this time, please press star 1. Again, that is star 1 for questions. And we'll go next back to Andrew Shapiro.
Okay, thank you. A follow-up on getting a little more color here on the gear products. Are there, you know, right before the pandemic hit, literally, you know, the week of, you guys were moving in the equipment from your multiple quality gears entities acquisition. Are there aspects of your strategic goals and expectations for that acquisition that continue to lag as a result of COVID that you foresee still an opportunity for the company? And can you discuss also the integration timing and milestones of the recently announced Jackson Gear acquisition into PTG and discuss some of the strategic benefits and synergies you hope to achieve with that acquisition?
Sure, I'll go first. To your first point, we were moving the equipment as the pandemic hit, and that is a business that is incredibly reliant on engineers sitting around the table discussing, you know, some part in front of them or a gearbox or system. And while you can maintain business without that face-to-face contact, for the most part, you know, there's always some attrition. It is incredibly difficult, if not impossible, to grow the business without that contact. And it's certainly better than it was for the last 24 months, but I think in 6 months it'll be better than where it is. So we're not quite at the point where we've unfettered access to everybody, but it's absolutely better. And I see no reason why it won't get better. And to you're alluding to the question, yeah, I think there's a lot of opportunity yet that we have not taken advantage of because of the lack of being able to visit. And then you were asking about the integration of the newly acquired Jackson Gear. All the equipment is moved. I believe all the personnel has been hired to absorb that. The factory is set up in the way that we're comfortable with. There was a fair amount of electrical work that had to be done. We did need to take a little more square footage. As I mentioned earlier, we beefed up engineering, so we've actually added more space for engineers. I would say we're still training some people. There were several nice things about this acquisition. One that was very nice was that while the gears being manufactured by Jackson were certainly on the larger side than the highest end of our production capabilities, the skill set and the machines are quite similar and in some cases identical to the ones we were already using. So the learning curve was pretty small for our experienced machinists. You know, for the newer ones, you know, they're learning gear cutting from the beginning. But so that's really helped a lot. In terms of milestones, and this is my opinion, I think it'll be a lot more reflective of opportunity in Q2 than Q1. And I think Q3 is probably really when we get the bulk of the benefits. Although, frankly, I think with each passing quarter, we'll do a little bit better. But it's Q1 is still transition. Q2 is better, and Q3 will be, you know, the bulk of the benefit. That's my opinion.
And about how large was Jackson Gear? What was its revenue base that you acquired?
We didn't disclose that, but I would say that it provided a significant increase to the current revenue levels of Quality Gear, of PTG.
In a relative sense.
So we'll start seeing that in the March quarter results, yeah, since you closed this acquisition in January, right?
You can't annualize March because it's a transition, but you won't miss it.
Okay. And in terms of your capital allocation priorities and such, given the still strong balance sheet and the income the company generated this year and your prospects, I was wondering what metrics, what factors has the board communicated or determined they are waiting for before restarting the company's modest dividend? What's the timeline for the company to consider reinstituting the dividend?
Andrew, all I can tell you is, and you know, it's like a broken record. You talk about this every single time, and I can promise you and assure you that it is on our agenda every single time we meet. That we don't need you prodding. We appreciate your concern and your interest, but we don't need you prodding. We've been doing it.
I think my question is pretty specific.
Let me answer the question.
Okay.
When we discuss it at the board, we discuss it with the bank agreements, with our own capital needs, et cetera, et cetera. And I promise you, I'm the biggest stockholder. I would be the biggest beneficiary of it. And when we can do it, we will do it. When we feel it's something that's sustainable, we will be having a dividend. And there's nothing more I can really get any more color to it. I can only tell you that we understood the benefit of the dividend way before it was brought to our attention by anybody else, and we instituted it when we did, and we understand very, very well how it would help the price of the stock. And as I promise you, as soon as we feel that the company is safe enough position that we can have a sustained dividend, not a one-time dividend, a sustained dividend going forward, we will be having it when that time comes. Do I think it's in the foreseeable future? If you ask me my opinion, I would say yes. But I can't pinpoint the time for you any better than that. So I appreciate your interest and your concern on it, but I don't know how else to answer the question for you. But I promise you, without your questions, we discuss it very, very regularly. And we understand.
Right, and my questions are asking for what the factors are that you guys consider and the milestones towards it. I don't see that, you know.
No, that's fine.
You don't need to bark at a shareholder for it.
I'm not barking.
You show disdain for your shareholders.
I'm not barking at all. I'm not barking. I'm telling you exactly where it is. And we discussed, I said, Joe, you can add any other color that you'd like to it if there is. But when we look at everything. We just don't look at our shareholders. We look at our operation, which is more important, because without our operation, the shareholders don't have much to do. So as long as we know the company is in good stead, that's when the stockholders, all of us included, will get the benefit of it.
Right.
Joe, you want to add anything
now,
to that?
In the
Go ahead, Andrew.
Go ahead, Andrew.
With respect to the press release discussing some CapEx, it seems like there's a decent amount of things on your plate for CapEx for the year. Can you give a little bit more color on the big items here that are planned and what the benefits you see come from that?
Andrew, I know there's a couple of decent-sized pieces of equipment we're looking at, really nothing unusual, and also bear in mind that a lot of our CapEx, don't quote me on the percentage, but it could be as much as half, is if you're asking
Hello?
Me, are we buying three big CNC machines, and that's the bulk of it, it's not. It's nothing like that.
No, but are you adding different? Are you adding new capabilities, or this is mostly replacement? Hello, you're cutting out, or are you gone silent? Hello?
Please stand by.
Tim is back in the queue if we lost him.
No, I'm here. We can't hear you guys.
You can't hear us?
Can you hear us now?
Now we can.
Okay. Not sure what happened.
Where did we cut you? Where did you get cut off, Andrew?
Pretty much on any explanation on if you were enhancing capabilities or this is more maintenance CapEx to understand maybe, you know, if there's payback and enhanced cash flows and earnings to be expected from the CapEx expenditures?
You know, I would say it's three things. It's maintenance, it's tooling, which is continuous as we bring online new products, and there are probably a couple of pieces of equipment that would be there to try to increase efficiencies. I think as we start to get our arm around the Jackson customer base, we may see some opportunities that we hadn't identified prior to the acquisition to create some efficiencies. So it would say it's those three things. I don't think it's any new market or anything like that. So it would be those three things, just maintenance, tooling, and then some pieces of equipment that can help us improve efficiency.
Okay, and also tracking other big things here is what is the size and the status of your Q4 refunds you expected? I'm assuming that is the ERC, the Employee Retention Credit, that sizably hit this quarter. And can you quantify that? And is that the sizable jump that we see in the prepaid expenses? And have you since received the payment, or when do you expect to receive that payment?
All right. So to answer your question, we haven't. The jump in prepaids is related to that. I mean, what you'll see also is if you see what our income for the year. Now this is GAAP, not tax, but we're showing very little tax expense in relation to the reported profit. So we had a number of NOLs that were available to us so that we weren't showing, you know, 26% tax expense on that $2 million gain. So there is a refund due on the 2020 filing, which we have not received yet, and we don't know when we're going to receive it.
So that's 2020 income tax coming back.
Yeah, a refund
from the NOLs, from the NOLs, and then with respect to the employee retention credit, which is a sizable amount that you've listed here, were those taken concurrently, or is that another check you expect to get in?
There's no other check. It's just a check we aren't paying. If, as I said,
right.
Well, okay. So I'm being reminded that yes. So we've got. I'm confusing you. So we've got the NOL,
yes,
which is due hopefully in the next few months related to the 2020 return. Then we have the tax benefit related to now recording that expense, which we would expect we're going to get that back sometime in 23. Well, that's what we're being told.
2023 or this calendar year?
So let me just, okay. So the 2020 return generated like, you know, $1 million in a refund-ish.
Okay.
That's going to be coming in the next few months. We don't know exactly when. The 2021 return where we filed, where we got this employee retention credit would be generating something like a $2 million refund. But that's not to be expected until we've been told by our tax people not to expect that in 22. It'll be hopefully early 23.
Right.
We don't know when.
So yeah, no, they take a long time on the ERC.
That is cash flow. It is due to us and on the way, hopefully, from the government.
Okay. Well, $3 million approximately from those two things, that's $1 a share in cash.
It is.
Yeah. Okay. That's nice to know, and we'll ask about it periodically as you get visibility on the timing of that. Your press release made no mention of any current shares outstanding number or even the one used for EPS calculations. So all we have is the prior 10Q to go off of. Can you provide us with a more current outstanding share or fully diluted share count?
It's unchanged, Andrew.
Okay, so we're dealing with about $10.50, frankly, more than $10.50 a share in tangible book value and almost $14 a share in book value a share then,
yeah,
give or take. Given
I haven't done that math yet lately, but, yeah, that sounds about right.
Okay. And do you guys obviously feel our company shares are undervalued. When do you feel it would be appropriate for the company to spend any time in addition to these quarterly calls articulating the company's investment proposition via, you know, incremental, and they have these virtual things where you wouldn't even have to leave the comfort of your couch to do a little bit of investor relations activity?
Well, as we've said before, you know, we've looked at that periodically. Given the trading in the stock, everyone we've spoken to about that said that it's just not a good use of our resources.
Yeah. Well, that's a chicken and egg issue.
We always consider it.
Yeah, it's a chicken and egg issue. You know, if you don't tell your story and articulate it beyond these wonderful calls,
but Andrew, we
you
can't create shares.
Won't answer.
We can't create shares.
No, you don't need. No, you. That is true. You cannot create shares. But if you create interest for shares and the stock doesn't appear to be a roach motel where you can get in but can't get out, you will have enhanced trading liquidity and you will have a higher price, which will generate even more trading liquidity.
Okay,
it's again a chicken and egg issue. All right, I'll back out. I have more questions on a few divisions.
We'll go to our next caller, Timothy Stabos.
You're not going to believe this, but I actually disagree with Andrew on this one. I don't think that, investor relations is a good thing, and PNF has always needed more of it, in my opinion, so I'll agree with him on that. But where I disagree is I don't think there's enough of a story to tell yet. You've got to start getting some traction profit-wise and showing that these, you know, this is a growth company, the strategies are working. So I agree with the management on this one that more heavy-hitting investor relations efforts are probably not quite – we're not quite there yet. So that having been said, appreciate the discussion around the dividend and the willingness to give some color on that, Richard. Obviously, buybacks have been significant. Strangely enough, you bought shares back from this shareholder years ago. I believe you bought a block back from Fidelity, and the count's gone down from maybe 3.6, 3.7 million down to 3.1. That's with the asset value underlying the company. That's been a way to increase shareholder value. I do think that I did actually, to be honest with you, text Mr. Shapiro this morning saying, where are the Q4 numbers? Because I kind of am reacquainting myself more deeply with the company as I've bought shares the last few months. I did want to second the notion that, and very respectfully, that I am not aware of a public company on NASDAQ that does not, like, actually release its Q4 numbers. So while I do appreciate and on some level respect the desire to perhaps keep costs down or something, from an investor relations standpoint and a broadening of the shareholder base, to be a company that doesn't actually release Q4 numbers is very damaging to the ability to broaden the shareholder base. And I really would encourage the board, as they listen to this call, and management to start releasing those numbers and to spend that money and put that out there, because you might as well not even be public. I just wanted to make that point out there.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
And I might have another, but I'm going to get back in queue. I'm figuring Mr. Shapiro probably has another question. I'm just guessing. Thank you for hearing me out.
And we will go back to Mr. Shapiro.
Great. Thank you. On a pre-pandemic call, you said progress was developing for AerCat in addition to aerospace tools for distribution opportunities in Europe. And, of course, the pandemic hit. But Europe is reopening. Where do those efforts stand, and is new market share and growth still on the horizon for this company in Europe?
Yes. You mean for AerCat? By the way, Europe is shutting down. It's not opening up from what I've been reading more and more. But having said that, our people are telling us that they are having the availability of more on-site visits in some of the European countries now. And it's been going on for, I would say, 60 days or something like that, and the numbers are starting to show that improvements in that regard. Is that the question you were asking?
Partially, yes. It was AerCat and Aerospace. You were going to get.
We mentioned the AerCat is not open yet. I think we mentioned that earlier in the call. They claim it's going to be momentarily, but we have not been told that as of yet. I mean, Airbus, excuse me.
You mean Airbus? Airbus. Yeah. Okay.
Andrew, I will share this. We now have a warehouse in the EU, in Germany, where we stock some AerCat, some UT, and actually even some high-tech product. And we did that because what we were seeing after UK left the EU, it was becoming cumbersome and difficult for our customers to work with us. So we've opened up a small warehouse that's managed by our German head of sales.
Okay. And regarding the tools, can you provide an update and some more color on your developments of the cordless models and the types of automotive and non-automotive applications for which our company is developing the cordless models in each of high-tech and Florida pneumatic? I think on prior calls you said that in the beginning of this year there would be more information on that.
With respect to automotive, we currently are not working on any cordless product. We have some development going on in some other areas, which I'm not going to get into a lot of detail, but it's been challenging. There have been some supply chain issues, and development has been difficult because, as you may or may not know, that technology is tightly controlled by three very large companies. So getting into that has been a little more difficult. We've been more successful at working with other companies that have some battery technology already and seeing what we can do to add on to their system as opposed to just starting from scratch and developing our own cordless tool. But there is some of that still going on. But progress has unfortunately been held up a bit.
Yeah. Thank you. And regarding your new products and experience so far in the high-tech OEM engineered solutions, which you stated that you are emphasizing versus ATP, are there any particular areas, industries, or products worthy of any call out and elaboration?
Well, I would say that with the addition of Jackson, we're now into a few other markets that we weren't necessarily into before. We're much bigger into mining than we were, and I'm not talking about mining for coal, although there is certainly some of that. It would be mining for other metals, both rare and not so rare, and there are opportunities both within the tools themselves, the machines that are involved in mining, all sorts of production equipment involved in mining that we're seeing. So mining globally is now a much more important part of our business than it ever was. So.
Uh-huh. Okay, thank you. And the spray gun tools had enjoyed substantial year-over-year increases for many quarters. Are such sales beginning to run up against tougher comps, and do you see this business just leveling off or scaling down?
Yes, the answer is yes. It's scaling down, and it's at a new level, new lower level than it was, without a question.
I think it's higher than it was pre-pandemic, yes, but lower than the peak of the pandemic, I think is
right.
How I would describe it.
I would agree with that.
Okay. And has the Amazon channel, I think you've stated, has continued its growth. Am I correct? And have you seen channels other than Amazon exhibit increases yet?
Other digital channels, internet channels? I'm not sure what you mean.
Well, I mean, you have your direct to Home Depot.
Yeah.
You have your, I guess, other branded, and you go through Amazon, but you've had Catalog, Grainger, you've had other channels that were meaningful before. Is your Amazon growth at their expense, or have you seen these other channels exhibit increases yet from the
post-pandemic? Well, again, Amazon is almost exclusively automotive. We do sell a few industrial tools there, but it's automotive. And as I said earlier, it absolutely is at the expense of other channels. So I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, I guess it pretty much does. I'll back out into the queue. I may be done even.
And as a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 at this time. Again, that is star 1 for questions. That is star 1 for questions. And we'll go again to Timothy Stabos.
I did note in the earnings release, thank you. I did note in the earnings release, the concluding statement, Richard, that our goal has always been to serve our customers while improving shareholder value. Interestingly enough, 20 years ago, it was March 29, 2002, the stock was trading at $7. We've gotten about $1 plus worth of dividends, stock $6 now. Basically, the shareholder has been flat over 20 years. Can you give us reassurance on how the next 20 years may and why it would be different than the last 20 years?
Tim, I don't have a crystal ball. I can't possibly answer that question. I'm really sorry. I'd be happy to answer any question you have that I can have a full – I can't – in this world, I can't – we can't look more than 3 months ahead. How can we look 20 years ahead?
Is there any context to the fact that the shareholders haven't made anything, the fact that you've taken about $25 million out of the company over the last 20 years?
I don't understand
is that
your question.
Part of it?
I don't understand your question, Tim.
Does that have to do with earnings?
Okay. Thank you.
And again, that is star 1 for questions. And it appears there are no further questions at this time.
Okay, well, thank you all for being on the call today with us, and we look forward to speaking to you in May for our first quarter 2022 results. Have a good day, all, and everybody, please stay safe. Thank you.
This concludes today's call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.